Welcome to Base by Base, the papercast that brings genomics to you wherever you are. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to follow and rate us in your podcast app. So I want you to imagine something happening inside of you right now.
Oh, I think I know where you're going with this.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. Every single day, countless cells in your body naturally reach the end of their lifespan. You know, they just die off. And when they do, they shed these tiny fragments of their DNA into your bloodstream, your saliva, your urine.
Right. It's just this constant microscopic biological debris.
Exactly. You're constantly generating it, and it just flows through you. But, and here's the really scary part, if you have a hidden tumor, those cancer cells are shedding their DNA into those exact same fluids.
Which brings up a massive medical mystery.
It really does. How can scientists tell the difference between the harmless debris of a normal dying cell and the dangerous debris of a growing tumor? And, like, doing it just by looking at the exact physical size of those tiny DNA fragments.
Well, honestly, it sounds like trying to identify a specific type of tree just by, I don't know, looking at the wood chips left behind by a chainsaw.
That is a perfect way to put it.
Yeah, because the physical remnants are so small and disorganized that for a really long time, we didn't think there was a reliable way to distinguish them. But the mathematical and biological precision we're looking at in this deep dive today changes that entirely.
Today, we celebrate the work of Zizou, Hui Zhao, Nitzan Rosenfeld, Amit Roshan, Wendy and Cooper, and the team at the Center for Cancer Cell and Molecular Biology at Barts Cancer Institute and the Cancer Research UK Cambridge Institute, who have advanced our understanding of cell-free DNA fragmentomics and non-invasive cancer detection.
And, you know, to really appreciate the scale of what this team has accomplished, we should probably establish the landscape of cell-free DNA first, or cfDNA as it's called.
Right. Because it's the foundation of everything we're talking about.
Exactly. So when a cell dies, its nucleus breaks apart. The DNA inside doesn't just vanish into thin air, right? It gets chopped up and released into the surrounding fluids.
And the scientific study of the exact patterns, lengths, and sizes of these floating fragments is what we call fragmentomics.
Which is a field that has been, well, heavily focused on cancer diagnostics for quite a while now.
Yeah, the basic idea being that if we can just draw some blood and spot the tumor's DNA floating around in there, we can catch cancer without needing, like, invasive tissue biopsies.
Yeah, that is definitely the ultimate goal. For years, researchers have basically relied on this recognized quirk about circulating tumor-derived DNA.
Right, the size difference.
Yes. Generally speaking, tumor DNA tends to be shorter than normal, healthy, cell-free DNA. Most normal cfDNA clusters around 167 base pairs in length.
Okay, 167.
Right. But tumor DNA is usually shorter, frequently falling under 150 base pairs.
So the conventional approach was to essentially use blunt force. Diagnostic tools would just group these DNA fragments into rough-sized buckets.
Basically.
So they would look at a blood sample, see a higher percentage of fragments in the short bucket, meaning under 150 base pairs, and just conclude that the patient might have cancer.
It was a very low-resolution way of looking at the biology. It worked in some instances, but it totally lacked a mechanistic understanding of the fragmentation process itself.
Right, and treating the size like a random accident seems like a huge blind spot. I mean, scooping DNA into arbitrary buckets doesn't explain the biological machinery dictating why the DNA breaks the way it does in the first place.
No, it doesn't, and that caused a lot of problems.
Because if you look at the historical data, those broad-size profiles varied wildly based on completely unrelated factors. Like, if a lab stored the blood slightly differently, or used a different chemical prep.
Or even ran it through a different sequencing machine, the size profiles just shifted all over the place.
It's kind of like trying to measure the exact length of a piece of string, but every lab uses a different pair of scissors that frays the edges slightly differently.
That's a great analogy. You're hitting on a fundamental flaw in the old methodology. The inconsistency was maddening for clinicians.
I can imagine. So what was the fix?
Well, what we needed was to understand the actual biological machinery protecting the DNA inside the cell. DNA doesn't just snap at random intervals, you know?
Right, it has structure.
Exactly. Inside the cell nucleus, the DNA double helix is wrapped really tightly around protein spools called nucleosomes. Think of thread wrapped around a wooden spool.
Okay, I'm picturing it.
The DNA that is tightly wrapped around the core is physically protected. but the DNA linking one spool to the next, that part is exposed and vulnerable.
Oh, I see. So when a cell dies and the body's cleanup enzymes come in to chop up the debris, those enzymes act like molecular scissors.
You've got it.
They can easily snip the exposed linker threads, but they really struggle to cut the protected sections that are wrapped around the spool.
That is the crucial mechanism right there. The size of the resulting fragments maps perfectly to the physical dimensions of those protein spools.
Wow.
And the researchers in this study, they didn't just look at a few blood samples to test this out. They analyzed massive data sets of cell-free DNA across 5 entirely different bodily fluids.
Wait, 5 different ones?
Yes, saliva, urine, cerebrospinal fluid, lymphatic fluid, and blood plasma.
That is a staggering amount of data. And when you analyze hundreds of millions of DNA fragments across all those fluids, plotting the sizes on a standard graph just gives you, well, a messy clump.
It's basically unreadable at first glance.
Right. You get a big mountain around 167 base pairs and this bumpy, noisy slope leading up to it. So to make sense of it, the team applied a mathematical technique called size deconvolution.
Which sounds incredibly complicated.
It does. Let me see if I can put an analogy to this, because deconvolution is a pretty dense term. So if you press 5 keys on a piano at the exact same time, you hear a complex, dense musical chord, right?
Yeah, definitely.
That chord is our messy clump of DNA sizes. The deconvolution model acts like a highly trained musician with a perfect ear who can listen to that messy chord and instantly separate it out, identifying each individual pure note being played.
The analogy holds up incredibly well, actually. To separate those biological notes, the researchers used a specific mathematical distribution called the Cauchy-Lorentz distribution.
Wait, what? That model specifically? Why not just use a standard Gaussian bell curve? I mean, that's what we usually see in statistics.
Well, a standard bell curve assumes that most of your data clusters neatly around an average, and extreme outliers are incredibly rare. It tapers off smoothly.
Okay.
But biology, especially cellular destruction, isn't always neat. The Cauchy-Lorentz distribution has what statisticians call fat tails.
Fat tails.
Yeah. It is much better at accommodating chaotic, extreme outliers. Because DNA breaking apart isn't a perfectly uniform process, the Cauchy-Lorentz model captured the biological reality of those random breaks much more accurately than a bell curve could.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
So they run this fat-tailed Cauchy-Lorentz model across the data from all 5 bodily fluids.
And the results were stunning.
Right. The messy clump separates into a series of distinct, perfectly regular peaks, spaced exactly 10 base pairs apart.
And that 10 base pair spacing is the biological confirmation that the math actually works.
How so?
Because that spacing maps exactly to the structural turns of the DNA double helix as it wraps around the nucleus and spools. The DNA completes one full turn around the spool roughly every 10 base pairs, so the breaks naturally cluster at those intervals.
That is so elegant. The deconvolution model gave them 3 precise measurements for every single peak or component in the sequence. First, the center, meaning the exact length of the fragment.
Right.
Second, amplitude, which is the height of the peak, basically telling us how many fragments are that specific size. And third, the scale, which is the width of the peak.
And that third measurement, the spale, became the key to the entire study.
Really? Why the width?
Because the width of the peak correlates directly to what the researchers define as fragmentation entropy, or in simpler terms, randomness.
Let's make sure we ground that for the listener. So a narrow peak means the DNA broke at exactly the same spot almost every time.
It's predictable.
But a wider, broader peak means the breaks were more chaotic, happening all over the place. That is high entropy.
Measuring that entropy completely shifts the analytical framework. We aren't just counting fragment sizes in a bucket anymore. We are actively measuring the chaos of the biological destruction.
Which gives the researchers an incredibly powerful new mathematical lens. They pointed at the data, and they find a massive biological boundary. A literal pivot point in the human genome's waste disposal system.
It was a huge discovery.
They found a highly specific peak at exactly 159 base pairs. And based on what we've discussed about the spools, I'm guessing 159 isn't just a random number, right? It has to be the physical edge of the spool itself.
You are tracking the mechanism perfectly. It represents the strict physical boundary between intranucleosomal DNA and internucleosomal DNA.
Okay, let's break those terms down for everyone.
Sure. So about 147 base pairs of DNA are wrapped tightly around the core of the histone spool. That is the internucleosomal part.
Got it.
But there is another protein, a linker histone called H1, that pins the DNA to the outside of the spool, taking up a little more space.
Oh,
When you add up the tightly wrapped core and the specific geometry of that linker pin, you hit a structural boundary at exactly 159 base pairs.
So everything below 159 is tightly protected core DNA, and everything above it stretches out into the looser, exposed internucleosomal linker regions.
Precisely. And the researchers found further proof of this boundary by looking at the cut itself.
What do you mean by the cut?
When they compared single-stranded DNA to double-stranded DNA, they found a tiny three-base pair offset in all the peaks below 159, but no offset in the peaks above it.
I think we need to explain what a three-base pair offset actually looks like physically.
Imagine the molecular scissors cutting the double-stranded DNA. Above 159 base pairs, the DNA is loose and exposed, so the enzymes slice cleanly through both strands at the exact same spot.
Just a perfectly flush cut.
Exactly. But below 159 base pairs, the DNA is tightly coiled around the spool. The enzymes struggle to get a clean angle, so they cut one strand and then cut the other strand slightly further down, leaving a staggered overhang of exactly three base pairs.
Wow.
Yeah, the fact that this staggered cut only happens below 159 base pairs proves, biologically, that the mechanisms of fragmentation are fundamentally different for the tightly wrapped core versus the loose linker regions.
Okay, finding the edge of the spool and understanding the cutting mechanism is incredible biology. But the core mission of this deep dive is catching cancer.
Right, back to the diagnostics.
To find the true signature of a tumor using this new entropy measurement, the researchers look at a unique group of people, patients with Li-Fraumeni syndrome.
Yes. Li-Fraumeni syndrome is a rare genetic condition where individuals carry a germline mutation, a mutation in their genetic code, present from birth, specifically in the TP53 gene.
The TP53 gene is often called the guardian of the genome, right? It's the gene that tells a damaged cell to stop dividing and essentially self-destruct before it turns into a tumor.
That's right. Without a fully functioning TP53 gene, that failsafe is broken. This makes these patients highly prone to developing various, often aggressive, cancers over their lifetime.
That's awful. But from a research standpoint,
from a research perspective, this cohort provides an unparalleled biological control group. You have individuals with the exact same underlying genetic vulnerability. Some of them currently have active cancer, and some of them do not.
Now, if we think back to the old size bucket method, both groups looked incredibly similar, didn't they? Both the cancer patients and the non-cancer patients with Li-Fraumeni syndrome had high levels of those shortened cfDNA fragments.
They did. And that highlights the terrifying false positive rate of the old method.
Right, because if you just measure the quantity of short fragments, you cannot tell the active cancer patients apart from those who are currently cancer-free.
Exactly. Their baseline biology is already producing similar fragment sizes. But when the researchers applied the size deconvolution model, separating the amplitude from the entropy, a massive, undeniable difference emerged.
The tumor DNA wasn't just short. It showed a much higher amplitude, meaning more fragments. But critically, it showed much higher entropy in those tightly wrapped intranucleosomal regions below 159 base pairs.
The scale of the peaks was broader?
Yeah. The DNA from the tumor wasn't just breaking, it was breaking chaotically.
The immediate question becomes, well, why is the tumor DNA so chaotic?
Here's the answer.
A tumor is essentially tissue growing recklessly out of control. It often grows so fast that it outstrips its own blood supply. The cells deep inside the tumor suffocate, die, and undergo necrosis.
Yikes.
It's a messy, disorganized collapse, and the DNA shatters unpredictably.
But to prove that this high entropy spike was truly unique to the chaos of a tumor, the researchers had to test it against other massive biological events that cause widespread cell death.
They did, yes.
Because right now, you and I have cells dying in our bodies. If we go for a run or get a bruise or fight off a cold, our immune system steps in to clear out dead cells. So they looked at two extreme medical scenarios, right?
Right. They looked at patients undergoing intense radiotherapy and patients who had just received liver transplants.
In both of those clinical scenarios, the patient's body is dealing with a massive amount of cellular death.
Mm-hmm.
But it isn't a growing tumor causing it.
Exactly. It is the body's own immune system stepping in to clean up the damage. Specifically, immune cells called phagocytes.
Basically the cleanup crew.
Right. They act like biological Pac-Men, engulfing the dying cells, digesting them methodically, and spitting the chopped up DNA into the bloodstream.
So when you look at the DNA in a post-radiotherapy patient or a transplant patient, you see a huge flood of short DNA fragments.
You do.
If you just look at the amplitude, it's very high. The phagocytes are doing their job, chopping up the DNA into small pieces.
But the difference lies in the entropy. The immune system's clearance makes short DNA fragments, but it does not increase the fragmentation entropy.
This is the total breakthrough moment. The immune system is like a highly efficient, methodical recycling plant. It breaks down the DNA cleanly and predictably. The peaks on the graph stay narrow.
Yes, very orderly.
But the tumor is a chaotic wood chipper. Only the tumor DNA produced that wild high entropy signature with those fat-tailed outliers.
By decoupling the amplitude, the sheer number of fragments from the entropy, the randomness of the breaks, the researchers successfully cracked the code.
Incredible.
They found a mathematical way to separate the loud noise of a normal, healthy immune response from the true chaotic signal of a malignant tumor.
Let's translate this into clinical practice. This completely changes the landscape for liquid biopsies. Doctors can use a simple blood draw, but instead of just weighing the DNA or throwing it into sized buckets, they calculate the ratio of intra to internucleosomal entropy.
Exactly.
They filter out the recycling plant noise and isolate the wood chipper cancer signature. So the real test, how well did it actually work?
The statistical validation is very compelling. They evaluated the model using a metric called the area under the curve, or AUC.
Okay, what does that mean in real terms?
Well, in this context, an AUC of 0.5 is a coin toss, just purely random guessing. An AUC of 1.0 represents absolute diagnostic perfection.
Got it.
When they used this new entropy ratio to separate patients with gastric cancer from patients with non-cancerous benign gastric disease, the model achieved an AUC score of 0.87.
Okay, hold on. I need to jump in here and play the skeptic for a second. Yeah. An AUC of 0.87 is obviously a massive leap over the coin toss old method, but that still leaves a 13% margin of error.
That's true.
If I am a patient waiting on a blood test to tell me if I have stomach cancer, a 13% chance of a false positive or a false negative is terrifying. Is that actually good enough for clinical practice right now?
That is the exact right question to ask. No, a single test with an AUC of 0.87 is not going to replace a definitive tissue biopsy tomorrow. It is not a standalone silver bullet.
Right, you'd want more confirmation.
Exactly. You have to view this as a powerful new filter in a multimodal approach. Previously, the background noise of the immune system blinded us to the tumor signal entirely. Now we can see the signal.
That makes sense.
And when combined with other diagnostic markers, that 0.87 becomes incredibly valuable. Furthermore, they tested this in large multi-cancer cohorts looking at breast, lung, ovarian, and pancreatic cancers.
And how did it do there?
The entropy ratio achieved AUCs of 0.81 and 0.85 across these diverse data sets. Crucially, it proved highly effective for catching early stage I cancers.
Man, catching stage I cancer from a blood draw is the holy grail of oncology, because early detection is just the biggest factor in survival rates.
Without a doubt.
But biology is endlessly complicated. Where does the research go from here? Like, what is the blind spot of this specific model?
Well, the current limitation is that while the mathematical model successfully filters out the noise from normal immune phagocytosis, it still needs to account for highly destructive non-cancerous conditions.
Like what?
Consider severe autoimmune diseases, where the body is aggressively attacking its own healthy tissue, or severe vascular diseases that cause rapid tissue death.
I see.
In those extreme conditions, the cellular destruction might also be chaotic enough to mess with the DNA fragmentation patterns and create false positive entropy spikes.
Right, so the next step for the field is to map out exactly how those specific diseases alter the nucleosomal footprint.
Exactly, we need to refine it further.
We need to fine-tune the filter to recognize different types of chaos. But the core engine they've built here, the mathematical ability to measure the entropy of DNA breaks, it's revolutionary. It's a whole new way of listening to the biological data flowing through our veins.
We have moved from simply weighing the puzzle pieces to actually understanding the three-dimensional shape and origin of the puzzle itself. By mathematically deconvoluting cell-free DNA into distinct nucleosomal peaks, researchers discovered that tumor DNA exhibits a unique signature of high fragmentation entropy. This specific signature allows scientists to distinguish true cancer cells from normal cellular death and immune clearance, paving the way for far more accurate and sensitive, non-invasive cancer diagnostics.
It really forces us to entirely reevaluate the diagnostic power hidden within the waste products of our own biology. What does this mean for the future of routine blood tests? And could this mathematical approach eventually allow us to map the precise origins of every piece of free-floating DNA in our bodies? This episode was based on an open access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoyed this, follow or subscribe in your podcast app and leave a 5-star rating. If you'd like to support our work, use the donation link in the description. Now stay with us for an original track created specially for this episode and inspired by the article you've just heard about. Thanks for listening, and join us next time as we explore more science, bass by bass.
Cold spin, bright screen glow. Tiny shards of truth in a river below. Lengths like footprints in a shadow parade. We sip the noise for the cuts that were made. Not every sharp piece means the same kind of fight. Some hands break clean, some break in the light. Draw the curves, let the hidden peak speak. Find a signal everybody used to miss. Read it in the fragments where the nuclear zones breathe. The line at 159, like a seam in the weave. Two more toes, a different story. Wallet in the core, higher in the entropy. Knocking at the door, we don't guess, we resolve it. Hear the pattern get clear. From the mess to the message, the truth is near. Lorenzian halo stack like steps in time. Regular space in a mechanical rhyme. Shallow reads that we fit it tight. R squared high like a target in sight. And one phagocyte short and it's a different kind of shift. Amplitude can rise but the chaos doesn't lift. So we take that ratio and drift that enter in the frame. Separating lookalikes that never share the name. Now the rock climbs higher. New eyes on the trace. A liquid whisper turning into evidence. Read it in the fragments where the nucleosomes breathe. A line at 159, like a seam in the weave. Two metals, a different story. Water in the core, higher in the entropy. Opening the door, we don't guess, we resolve it. Let the components align.